This is Dr. Jim Bertel coming to you live from my home here in Maumelle, Arkansas. And once again, it's our privilege to have Pastor Mike Smith on with us. And we're going to be talking about the 14th Amendment today and the horrible 14th Amendment, what I like to call it. And I'm hoping that you'll stay with us and listen and find out what in the world's going on regarding this 14th Amendment. So, Mike, why don't you give us just a moment of time to prepare for the study of God's Word through an application of His Word to this situation, the 14th Amendment. And then I'll maybe ask you to make a couple announcements for us, and then we'll be off and running.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Heavenly Father, we thank you for another day and for this medium that we have that we can talk about the truth, your truth, and truth as it applies to other areas, and it goes out all over the world. We thank you for Dr. Jim and his faithfulness, and pray that you will help us to have clarity of thought today as we discuss these issues that affect us all, and we pray it in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. And by the way, the telephone number here is 501-944-1678. That's my cell phone. And if you would like to call the program with a comment or a question, you're welcome to do that, 501-944-1678. And, Mike, just quickly, tell us where your church is when you meet, and if somebody's in that area, let's have them come visit you.
Okay. It's the website is countrybiblechurch.us, and that's all small letters.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. We also meet on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock. And I teach a young people's class on Wednesday that starts at 6:30, and we go till 8 o'clock. So, and we have nurseries available. And our address, the church address, is 3150 William B. Travis Lane,
mm-hmm.
halfway between Brenham and Chapel Hill, and there's not a whole lot out there, and you can see our sign, so anybody that would like to come and join us, we'd be glad to have you.
Yeah, and if they, no matter where they are in the world, though, they can actually get you on those, every service except your teen class, isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So just log on to the BBN, and bingo, they're in the, what are you studying right now, Mike?
Well, I'm teaching the Star Series, God's Message in the Stars, on Sundays.
Okay.
And I'm teaching Colossians. I'm still in the first chapter of Colossians on Tuesdays and Thursday evenings.
So in the first chapter of Colossians, and you started that in 1994, right?
I think we're Tuesday we're going to be on Lesson 60.
Lesson 60?
Lesson 60, and I'm on the scripture will be Colossians 1:24.
It's a good thing you didn't start in Genesis. Okay, pal. Let's see. Let me see now. Let's go ahead and start with this 14th Amendment. And I'd like to really start and just read Section 1 again. And I'd like to talk about Section 1 again with you for just a little bit, okay?
Okay. All right.
Go ahead and read that Section 1.
Okay. Section 1 of 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Now, this is an amendment to the United States Constitution. And since the Constitution is the highest law of the land, then we as, quote-unquote, citizens of the United States, we are subject to this law. Is that correct?
Well, if you decide mm-hmm. to be a U.S. citizen,
yes, mm-hmm.
and then you are, excuse me, you're subject to its jurisdiction in all the statutes, rules, codes, and regulations.
Yes. Well, by this, I don't mean, I'm not really looking for an exception right now. This, in other words, if someone who doesn't understand some of the things that you and I are understanding, and they read this, they would conclude that they are under this law, would they not?
Right.
Okay, now, I think that's right. I think that that's absolutely correct. When we're not looking for exceptions to the rule. We're just trying to understand what is here. If I just came to this thing and said, okay, I need to study this and find out what I'm subject to. And it says all persons born in the United States. Well, so we're cool there. You and I were born in the United States. Or naturalized, and this naturalization is taking an immigrant to the United States who has a desire to become a quote-unquote citizen of the United States, and they go through the legal process of becoming a citizen of the United States. And it's just been about, I don't know how many, the time goes so fast, it's either 3 years ago, something like that, that my daughter-in-law, as a Filipina, became a naturalized citizen, and my family and she and her husband went to Memphis, Tennessee, where she was sworn in as a naturalized citizen. Now, so we've got two people here, two groups, born here and naturalized. Now, Mike, you and I know when we study, as a real studying the Greek language, that the conjunction and has more than one meaning. And it would even in our language also. But the question then is, if all persons born and or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that appears as though the question is that a connective conjunction or is that used in the ascensive sense where it would be translated even? My question is this then, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that appears as though that it would be possible to be a person born here or naturalized here and not be subject to the jurisdiction.
That's the way the normal reading would be in English. I think that there's a difference, though, between those who are born and those who are naturalized. If you're naturalized, then you have to go through a process in order to be recognized as a United States citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's your choice, it's your volition involved in order to become a U.S. citizen. It's something that is granted you. But if you're born here, there's no volition involved. It's not that you're choosing to be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's maybe a fine line, but still, I think it's a distinction that...
There's no doubt about that. If you're born here, we've even got to be careful here because we're going to bring up this idea. We're not going to talk about it today necessarily, but this thing about anchor babies. You see, that's become a problem with these illegal aliens coming in and coming in here to birth their child to become a citizen of the United States based on a false understanding of this particular amendment. But while you're right that there is no volition involved for people like you and me, born of parents who are citizens of the United States, there's no volition there. But it is volitional to become a naturalized citizen. But when you choose to go through that process, when you're done and you're sworn in, there's no choice. You become automatically a citizen of the United States.
Right. That's the way it appears to me.
And yes.
You know, the people who crafted these laws are very careful. The words they use aren't just kind of pop into their head.
Yes, uh-huh.
They're very, very critically and very specific in the words they use because it projects a certain meaning.
Yes.
For instance, the word person, why wouldn't it say all people born are naturalized in the United States?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because persons has a particular legal a definition or can include in its mm-hmm. orbit or in its scope to be a person can be a corporation as well.
Yeah.
And so that's one reason they use that there.
Yeah.
And when they get to, if they wanted to say that and make it perfectly clear they could have said, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that there would be any question there. They're saying if you're born here, you're subject to the jurisdiction. Wouldn't that be clear?
Well, that's, yeah, that's...
Replace and with are?
That's the way it would appear, but let me throw something, a caveat out to you, okay?
Okay.
See, what happens is that phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, the issue with this is really not with the naturalized citizen, because when you become naturalized, in fact, you are subject to the jurisdiction. But listen, all persons born in the United States are not necessarily subject to the jurisdiction. For example, if an illegal immigrant comes into the United States and bears a child somewhere inside our boundaries, this appears as though that they, because they're born here, that they would be a citizen of the United States, except for the fact that their parents are actually citizens of Mexico, and they are not subject to this jurisdiction thereof. And this is that phrase, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, is the phrase that actually is used to deny citizenship to any child born here to an illegal alien. And I think that's absolutely correct.
Well, the one thing I think is for certain that most people would agree on is that saying and instead of are, you are subject, certainly throws doubt on the idea that if you're born here, you're automatically under the jurisdiction of the United States.
Yes,
and that you are automatically a U.S. citizen. Now, I think that's the way the great majority of people what they believe. They think that if you're born here, you're automatically a U.S. citizen. But
that's exactly right.
The way this amendment is written is subject to question, and I question it because if I was reading this as I would normally read anything else, I wouldn't say that this is mandatory or automatic. It's adding something to it. And if they meant to say even instead of are, they could have done that. They did it purposely, so they could make this voluntary. It's a voluntary idea. In other words, they're saying we're setting this up, and if you're born in this geographical location, you can be under the jurisdiction of it. But it's voluntary. You don't have to be. And that's why they use the word "and." Now I'm just telling you what my opinion is.
Absolutely, I understand.
Why I think they did it this way. And that way, they can't say, well, we didn't force anybody to do anything.
If you
call yourself a U.S. citizen, and you're voluntarily being under that jurisdiction, and that means all of the code rules and everything else. It's not done knowingly. It's deception and fraud, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, You brought up something last week, and my questioning of that first sentence really, in my own mind, is dealing with this idea of illegal immigrants coming into the United States, bearing children, considering the child a citizen of the United States, now waiting till that child grows up, and then making allowance for that parent to come back in here as a citizen of the United States. So this is sort of anchor baby thing for me in sentence one. But you brought up something last week that I think we need to understand. And that is, we need to remember when this amendment took place.
Right.
And it took place.
You put it in context, just like you do the Bible.
Absolutely. And in context, it was written right after the Civil War, what we called the Civil War. Now, that being the case, these next statements are really important then, are they not?
Pardon?
I say this next sentence beginning with no state shall make or enforce any law. Does this not have everything to do with taking away of states' rights and placing authority in the hands of the government? And it had everything to do with what the North thought the issue in the Civil War was about slavery when it wasn't.
That's right. And most people, because the history books have reflected the mindset of the victors, it was an issue, but it wasn't the issue. The main issue was states' rights, and so they were victorious, and so now they're saying, okay, now the federal government is going to dictate to the states, be the overseer, as it were, the adjudicator, the one who is going to make sure that the states fall in line and stay in place and answer to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that just turned the whole of the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, it just turned it upside down.
Yeah.
Because the whole purpose for the Constitution was to give a few specific duties for the federal government. And they had the three branches of government so they could have balance of power so that no one branch could get more authoritative than it should. They did everything they could to give the government enough power that they could band, you know, for the purpose of which it was formed, but they were very careful not to give it too much power because they just saw what England had done, you know, and the usurpation there. And so and that wasn't even enough. The people demanded a Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights, all those 10 articles are saying government shall not do this. They can only go this far and they can't go any further. But now with the 14th Amendment, and where it's, and in the middle of this, it says no state shall make or enforce. And it says no state shall.
Mm-hmm.
Those three words were completely foreign to everything that preceded that in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And the Bill of Rights, because now you have the federal government dictating to the state, and that's what turned it all upside down. That's why the South would hated it, and plus, of course, it was punishing the South as well. But the only reason that they even signed on was because they were either going to do it or starve to death. They were under oppression. And even then, when it was supposedly ratified, I have a history book sitting right here in front of me that says they didn't have enough votes to ratify it anyway, but they did it anyhow. So there's a lot of nefarious things that went on.
Mm-hmm.
But that people don't recognize. When it says no state shall make or enforce, and it goes on about privileges and immunities, and all these are very, doesn't have anything to do with rights because the government doesn't give rights. All they do is give privileges and immunities, with which both can be removed from the government at their will.
Yeah, see, this is why you beat me to the punch here, and that's okay. But the next thing that we need to make sure we understand is Mike, I constantly make this kind of a statement, and my wife looks at me and says, you know, you're being demeaning, and I don't mean to be demeaning. I mean to be about as straightforward as I can be. And I tell people, you know, I had somebody send me an email the other day, or a text message the other day, and it was a capital G and a small letter M. And I heard my cell phone go off, and I looked over and saw it, and it said, gave me a telephone number. I didn't recognize the telephone number. It was a local Arkansas number, but I didn't recognize it, and I didn't recognize with a message, GM. And I wrote back, and I was busy, and I wrote back, and I said, you know, I speak English. I don't know what GM means, and I don't know who you are. Who sent this text message to me? Well, I didn't hear back. So whether it's friend or foe, I didn't hear back. But you see, what happens is, if we don't understand the language, I speak English. And you know what? That word privileges there is an important word. It's privileges, not rights. And it should be rights, not privileges. Am I correct?
Well, yes. Well, let me put it this way. The federal government doesn't give us rights.
That's exactly right.
If they would have put rights there, they would have been saying something that they can't do, because the Declaration of Independence, rightly acknowledges that our rights come from God.
From God, that's right.
What our federal government does is supposed to acknowledge those rights and protect and defend those rights. That's the main purpose of the government. And so they can't say, if they would have said rights there, it wouldn't have been proper either, because they don't give rights.
Well, yeah,
but all they can give is privileges. And see, can you see how sneaky this is?
Oh, yeah.
See, most people look at privileges or immunities, and it does. They think, okay, well, they don't think about it to the degree that they understand that, oh, privileges can be revoked, rights cannot.
Yeah, and really, that's, I guess that was my point, just poorly worded. But that word privileges is an important word, because we need to realize that what you're right when you said government may give you privileges, but if they give them to you, they can take them away.
Absolutely.
And they may be taking away, they may be giving us a, they may be granting us the privilege of something that is already a right.
Right, and when a privilege is, with a privilege, they can charge for that too, which they do. Every time you have to pay for a license, you're paying for the privilege of doing something.
Well, boy, yeah.
And that's another difference between a right and a privilege. You don't pay for rights, because they are God-given. By virtue of being born a human being, you have these automatic God-given rights. The privileges can be revoked, but also they can charge for them. And that's what licenses are.
Yeah. Well, Mike, just one more thing before we move on here, and that is that I grew up and was born and raised in the state of Ohio, and obviously we realize that's above the what we call the Mason-Dixon line. And so when you're looking back to the 1800s and what transpired coming to the toward the so-called Civil War, I was born in the North, and if I've heard one time, not recently, believe it or not recently, but when I came to Arkansas, if I've heard one time, I don't know how many times I heard, oh, you're from the North, you're from the North, you're from the North. And when they said that, it was maybe sort of sarcastic-like, but when I grew up, I knew nothing of this problem between the blacks and the whites. I knew nothing about the problem between the North and the South. If I heard about it, it didn't register. And then since I've been down here in the South since 1970, more than half of my life down here, I accept Arkansas. I accept this area. But what I do understand is this. As someone who came and born and raised from the North, I realize that the so-called Civil War was fought over states' rights had little to do with the color of a skin.
That's absolutely true. That was a flashpoint, a minor point that actually was in most important in elections, whether a state was going to come in as a free state or whether it was going to become in as a slave state.
Mm-hmm.
And there were compromises and things that were going on at the time. So many of things that people believe today are not right. For instance, they believe that when Abraham Lincoln made the Emancipation Proclamation, that freed the slaves. It didn't free anybody.
Yeah.
Because what he was doing was trying to made a proclamation that supposedly would hold weight in another country.
Yes.
The South was another nation. They were no longer part of the United States. They were not states. It was a nation. It would be like us making a proclamation for somebody in France. It has no weight. It has no standing. And so it didn't free anyone. And even there were still slaves in some of the northern states, and it only freed those in the southern states, according to the proclamation, but not those in the northern states.
Yes.
I'm just trying to show that so much of what people believe is erroneous, because this is what they learned in our government schools.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go back to the history and read. They don't even read it. If you read what it says, you'll see for yourself.
Well, I guess if we just stop with this section one here and move down through our document for just a moment, I guess what we ought to conclude from this is that if you understand history correctly, this 14th Amendment has been bungled. In other words, it's stirred the soup. It's created false ideas of what our Constitution is really all about, and that this was written basically to take care of perceived problems related to the Civil War. Am I correct or am I incorrect?
Well, you're correct, and it's, we didn't go into the other four sections in it, but it also was to punish the South with what they did, and the South was under military occupation for quite a while,
yeah.
And most people have heard, excuse me, of the carpetbaggers and so forth. But just to summarize what this amendment did, in my own words, is that prior to this time, you had states that were sovereign, and they created a federal government that had very limited powers.
Mm-hmm.
And the states were the masters, and the federal government were the servants. When this came out, it turned that upside down, and now the federal government became the master, and the states became the servants.
Yes.
And it hasn't changed since.
And so this really, and so what happened is this took place after or before our lifetime. So what's happened is we've grown up with this, and if unquestioned historically, since we don't understand history well enough, we just might accept this 14th Amendment as being okay, and then we just submit to this horrible law. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct. Most people don't even. Don't you say 14th Amendment? They don't know what you're talking about. This past Saturday,
yeah,
I went to West Houston Bible Church, to Robbie Dean's church, and there was a doctor there that was born in Israel but moved here, and he was giving the perspective of how Obamacare is devastating to the medical field, to doctors themselves, and he was giving us insights that were very revealing. But he said. Somebody asked him, well, how do we get to this point or whatever? And he brought up the 16th and 17th Amendments.
Yes, okay.
Which is income tax and the senators being elected. And those two, and he said, these are the things that are instrumental in setting us up, essentially, in the 21st century to be where we are.
Yeah.
He didn't even mention the 14th Amendment, and the 14th Amendment was more devastating, in my opinion, than the 16th, 17th, and 18th, all of them put together.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And so what my point is, most people are not even knowledgeable about this. I have a friend, Andy Woods. He has a Ph.D. He has a degree in law, and he has a doctorate degree in theology. And I was talking to him one time about my book. This was about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about the 14th Amendment. And I said something about the 14th Amendment, that it's against the law to even question the national debt. And he said, it is. I said, yeah, it's in the 14th Amendment. Now, here, I'm a nobody, but because I have made it a point to understand the most important documents that have bearing on our lives, being the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, and so forth. And he's in his book that I quote a number of times in mine.
Mm-hmm.
He says that lawyers don't study the Constitution.
Hello, I was just going to make that point.
Declaration of Independence. Yeah. He said all they do is study case law. They don't know anything about the Constitution.
Yeah, I hear you.
Most of them. There are exceptions. So this has a huge bearing on where we are today, because even. Since 2014 and on down, in the last decades, some of the devastating laws that have taken place emanate from this 14th Amendment. I gave you the one in California where the people voted against having to support illegal aliens there. One federal judge says, no, that's unconstitutional. You have to pay for all these things for illegal aliens. And he used the 14th Amendment to do it. So when you have the 14th Amendment to put the federal government in the driver's seat, that's one reason it's so hard for us to get away from centralized government and how it grows and gets bigger and bigger, but nobody knows about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike, I want you to repeat something that you said here, because I want our listening audience to understand and not get swallowed up by building the clock rather than telling the time. What you've done is great, No problem. But go back and say what you said about your book and what you explain to this friend of yours, who is in fact is he an attorney, or is he just graduated from law school?
I think he graduated from law school.
Okay. Well, okay. So here's a guy that graduated from law school, and you're teaching someone who graduated from law school, and this is not demeaning in any sense of the word, but tell us why he didn't understand what you said. What did you say about the Constitution and studying in law school?
Well, he told me himself, and it's in his book as well.
Yeah.
He even, I found it in his book, and he said that lawyers, when they go through law school,
yeah,
what they study is precedents, you know, and case law,
mm-hmm,
things of this sort, but they don't spend any real time in studying the Constitution or the Bill of Rights.
Okay, stop right there. Don't say any more, because that's what I want our people to hear. You can go to law school and never study the Constitution.
What he said, it's in his book as well.
Well, I believe John Darish has a brother who is an attorney, and he made the same statement.
Oh yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think that's one reason they don't have that knowledge in the about dealing with the Constitution.
Well,
by the way, the name of his book is Darwinian Evolution and the American Constitution.
Okay.
Dr. Andy Wood.
Okay.
What his main thrust is saying that the courts, especially our own Supreme Court, doesn't adhere to the organic Bill of Rights or the Constitution, because many, if not most, of the judges believe in evolution, and so they think, okay, well, we have evolved so much since the time that these founding documents were written that now we know more. We're superior in our knowledge, and so we don't need to go back to these archaic things because they weren't evolved as much as people are today.
Yeah.
And he backs it up in his book about the quotes from the Supreme Court judges.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but a lot of them go to other nations in order to get precedences from there, and instead of going to our organic Constitution itself.
Yeah, and by the organic Constitution, you're talking about, you mean the Constitution as it was determined to be understood by our founding fathers, not deemed to be outmoded, outdated, as the progressives consider today.
Right. It's what it was without all the amendments that have been added since the 10 amendments.
Yes.
And the people think that it's a living document that needs to evolve as well.
That's exactly right. Okay, now, let's stop right there for just a moment. And let's go on down below Section 5. And if we need to come back to Section 2, 3, 4, and 5, that's fine. But I'd like to move on for just a moment.
Okay.
Because the next paragraph, go ahead and read this next paragraph, because the question is, how did all this happen? What you and I have been talking about for 35 minutes now, how did this come about? Read that next paragraph.
Okay, so how did this happen? All of our trial courts are controlled by judges and lawyers who are taught by bar association schools, and all of these judges and lawyers are taught that statutes are law, thereby serving the new world order. Although occasionally you might get a judge like Judge Napolitano who understands the game and adjudicates constitutionally.
Okay, now let's go back here for just a minute, because you just read what you just said a moment ago. And that is that the trial courts, this is beyond now the common law grand jury.
Uh-huh.
When the common law grand jury, the grand juries today, if they find you possibly guilty, then you go to a trial court. And that, but it says here that the trial courts are controlled not by you and me, but by judges and lawyers. Well, isn't that amazing? These are the people that go to law school, by judges and lawyers who are taught by bar association schools, which means that your friend Annie Wood and John Derrick's brother, who told him that this thing about not studying the Constitution, that this is exactly what's happening. They're taught by bar association schools that are not necessarily steeping them in the Constitution of the United States. And it says that all these judges and lawyers are taught, what is it they're taught then? If they're not taught the Constitution, they're taught that statutes are law. Here, so what we're doing is, here's the law, and now let's study case law to find out what we ought to believe about this. Now watch, thereby serving the new world order. Now, I've got something to say about that in just a minute. But Judge Napolitano, are you probably aware who he is, or are you not, Mike?
Oh, yes. I have his book right here in front of me. It's Dangerous to Be Right When the Government is Wrong. Great book. I have a couple of others.
Okay. Well, by the way, he is a Fox News contributor, and quite frequently is seen on Fox News when there's something that needs to come up that's a legal matter, and they'll appeal to him as well as other attorneys. But they certainly appeal to him for an opinion on this thing. Now, I want to deal with the New World Order. So if you don't mind, let me read my paragraph where I've inserted a comment, and you're welcome to stop me. Just say stop. Just inject right there. Stop, and I'll stop, and we'll talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. Okay? Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's my comment about what Mike read here. All these judges and lawyers are taught that statutes are law, thereby serving the new world order. Well, I don't know what my listening audience understands about the new world order, but I have something to say about that. I have something to say about the new world order. I prefer the term one world government that correctly views the direction that the world is heading and will come to fruition during the tribulation period. That's the last 7 years of the age of Israel. Those who speak of the New World Order see a conspiracy leading to the New World Order. But my thought is that the primary mover of this conspiracy is Satan, not a human being, or not a group of human beings. And this is where you hear about the Bilderbergers, you hear about the Bushes, you hear about the Trilateral Commission, etc. And all this is connected to what people have been calling the New World Order. And those human beings who are the subjects of the so-called New World Order are merely the minions of the real conspirator, namely Satan. And those who use the term New World Order would do well to understand the following. Why did God create in the first place? Why did God create man? What is the purpose of human history? What is the angelic conflict? Why dispensations? Why four different sets of rules by which to live? What does it mean to rightly divide the word of truth? What is the reachable goal of every born-again Christian? Now, I say these people talking about New World Order need to understand those questions and need to be able to answer them correctly. But until these questions are answered satisfactorily from a biblical viewpoint, it is my understanding that those who use the term New World Order do understand. Yes, they do. They understand human instigators of conspiracy. But they do not understand the who and the why of the conspiracy as it relates to Satan, the who, and the angelic conflict, the why. Can those of us who understand the biblical who and why, those of us who understand it, the who and the why, can we work with those who use the term New World Order? And the answer is yes, under the following condition. We can work together if the objective of both groups, we and them, both groups, is to preserve the personal freedom that was decreed by Judeo-Christian God for the purpose of justifying, justly resolving the angelic conflict. And that is the end of my comment. Do you have anything you want to say about that? Tear it up, throw it out, destroy it, whatever you want to do.
I have a lot to say about it, but I found a quote in Dr. Andy Wood's book.
Okay.
That I mentioned a moment ago.
Yes, sir.
About the evolution, the mindset of the many, if not most of the judges today, this is a quote now, he says, because the framers represented an earlier generation, they were less evolved and less enlightened than we are.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, if we lean too heavily on their insights, we are actually retrogressing or devolving. Why return to a less evolved era?
And who said that?
This is in Dr. Andy Wood's book.
Yes, uh-huh.
And actually, this particular one had to do with the John Dewey and his expression of the sentiment when he noted that the belief in political, what he called fixity,
uh-huh.
of the sanctity of some form of the state concerned by the efforts of our fathers have hollowed by tradition in one of the stumbling blocks in the way of orderly and direct change. Dewey's point is that we are holding up evolutionary progress and upward ascent to the extent that we anchor ourselves to the beliefs of our founding fathers.
Now, is that John Dewey?
Yes.
Well, see, John Dewey was at the foundation. He and Thorndike and Cattell, they were mentored by a German who was involved in studying behavioral psychology, and it was Dewey who was at the foundation of changing the curriculum in our public school system that began back around 1900.
Right. He was an evolutionist, as the same as many of the judges.
Yes.
And we're still suffering and languishing under some of the crazy things. This is a quote from Janet Reno. She says, you are part, talking about the citizens. She was part of the Clinton administration.
Mm, yes.
The attorney general.
Yeah.
And she says, you are part of a government that has given its people more freedom than any other government in the history of the world. Now, here's the attorney government saying, I mean, excuse me, the attorney general
yeah.
saying that government gives us our freedom.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you.
Isn't that a bit revealing there? And you have, this is from Justice Charles Evan Hughes, who represented the legal populist school of interpretation. We would call him progressive today.
Yeah, okay.
He said, quote, we are under a constitution, but the constitution is what the judge says it is, end of quote. And then Andy says, if Hughes' statement is true, then we are no longer governed by a constitution, but rather by the latest Supreme Court opinion.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's what, see, when you go by precedence, instead of by the Constitution itself, somewhere along the line, you know that, and it's happened many, many times, you're going to have a Supreme Court that makes a bad decision. But it's a precedent. And so if all you're doing is following precedent, then you're just continuing a bad decision that was made, something that is unjust, you're just continuing it. Every decision that a court makes should be based on the circumstances and the facts of that case and how it relates to the Constitution, not to a precedent that could be wrong to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know,
I just wanted to throw that in before we went further, because it had to do with what we just talked about.
Yeah.
And that first, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And it says all of our trial courts are controlled by judges and lawyers who are taught by the Bar Association.
Yes.
School. So this is what they, I'm just giving you a tidbit here or there about how that has devolved. You know, we've devolved, all right, but it hadn't been because of evolution.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay, I just want to throw that in. I'm sorry.
We're fine. I want our listening audience to understand. There's a term, Mike. Somewhere along the line, I read this term, and I don't know that I've ever seen it since. But the question is, what kind of a term can we use to indicate an understanding of our Constitution as given to us by our founding fathers, with the idea that it's not going to be interpreted in any other way than that? The word that I remember from back when is the word static, as opposed to living. The idea of a living constitution means that is the idea that you can actually change the meaning of it because of changing circumstances in your culture. But the word static means don't change it. It shouldn't be changed. So what we need to understand in our generation is that the Constitution is no longer being seen and understood as our founding fathers understood it, and that's the way we should still be seeing it today. Is that correct?
That's correct. Most people who believe in evolution, I can't say that, not most people, but let me put it this way, let me word it this way.
Mm-hmm.
It would be easy for a person who believes in evolution to apply that to areas such as the law and education.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That in the law, you don't go by the Constitution if you believe in evolution, because now we are superior to what they were a couple hundred years ago, and so we know better because we've evolved. We're more intelligent now. And it's the same thing in the education, is that we don't need to teach children how to read, write, and arithmetic, mm-hmm. and this type of thing. We need to show them, give them some self-esteem, and we need to do these other things because we don't have, we have to change because we're more evolved now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that evolution idea permeates not just in the theological realm, but also on these others as well. Once you start thinking that we're superior, well, what the founders knew and what the country knew when they were being reared by the little blue book, I have it right here in front of me. It's called the New England Primer, which they taught children how to read from the Bible. The people who believe in evolution think, oh, those are all old mindsets now. Now we're superior. We know better than they did back then. But what these evolutionists don't take in consideration is the old sin nature, especially with our Constitution and Bill of Rights. All of that, these people knew. They knew the Bible much more, much better than most people do today, and they knew about the old sin nature. And so they were trying to shackle the federal government with the Constitution so it won't go beyond those bounds. But after the Civil War, the 14th Amendment, and the 16th, and the 17th, and the 18th, all these changed things to where now we're suffering because people don't recognize the influence of the old sin nature in these areas, such as education and government.
Yeah. Well,
does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, while we haven't got a phone call, Mike, I just got an email from a friend down in Birmingham, and he said, "Doc, this is good." He's talking about our conversation. "This is good," and reminded me of your ping pong ball illustration at camp. And I used a ping pong ball illustration back then. I'm not going to go into it right now, but we've got folks out here that are understanding what we're saying, agreeing with us, pal, for sure. So let me see now. Where do we go? Just drop down.
Well, I kind of got us off track because before we moved on, I had those few things I wanted to say regarding the trial. You know, we were talking about trial lawyers.
Yes, absolutely.
And the courts and how we. Wondering how all this came about, and I just threw a few things.
Well, listen, we didn't get off track, brother. We're just expanding our understanding of this thing, so
okay.
We're fine. Why don't you start with
your comment, starting with Dr. Jim, and then you went down to
bullet
points.
I cause things like this all the time, you know.
No. This is.
I'm teasing.
You were on track. It's just that I had some things in my mind I wanted to say before I commented on
what glad you
had.
Did.
And I knew that if I went on with what you said, I would lose.
Well, here's the bad news. Here's the bad news. It doesn't get any better.
Well,
okay. Sorry.
And I'm so glad that you put this in here to start with your commentary. You said, "Do I have anything to say about it?" Yes. Your very first statement here is, "I have something to say about the New World Order. I prefer the term one world government that correctly views the direction that the world is heading." Well, and I like it as well, because That's the biblical term. I mean, that refers to where we are headed, and you'd have to be blind if you don't know, if you know the Bible and you have something about eschatology and prophecy and so forth, you can see that we are heading exactly what the Bible has prophesied or predicted, in that we're having the world in the future.
Yes.
It's going to be a one world government. There's going to be a one world currency.
Yeah.
There's going to be one world religion. We call it internationalism. But the politicians are calling it the New World Order.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And I think it was very very smart of you to connect the New World Order with what the Bible says, the one world government.
Yeah.
You made that connection, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But, and by the way, every they say that it takes a child needs a village to raise it, and now that we're going towards internationalism, and the Bible is absolutely contrary to internationalism, and yet it prophesies that there is going to be a point in time in the future when we have internationalism to the utmost degree, where it's going to be called a one-world government.
Yeah. The beauty of all that, though, is we won't be here.
No, we won't be here at the time.
Hello.
Yeah. The Lord, in His grace, is going to take us out of this world before it gets to its... to its worst time that it ever will be or ever has been, but that's getting down into some of your bullet points.
You know, Mike, I thought if I knew exactly when the rapture was going to occur, I'll tell you, within I would say that probably in 29 days, since there's about 30 days in a month. 29 days before the rapture occurred, I would go out and buy everything I wanted and put it on a credit card.
Yeah.
And let the devil pay for it when I'm gone. So,
well,
anyway.
You know, the reason that the Lord keeps that date from us, in my opinion, it may be one reason for keep people from maxing out their credit cards, another reason is because when we don't know the exact time, it keeps us on our toes. It keeps us alert. I mean, it means that we better have all our ducks in a row, especially spiritually, theologically, and so forth. Because at any moment He could come. And if people think, and it's normal for, I think the normal mindset is to, well, it's going to come someday, but it might not be in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it's not going to be tomorrow. Probably not this month. Maybe not even this year or in the next decade.
Uh-huh.
And that tends to give them license to not be on top of their game.
Yeah, I agree, pal. Sure enough.
Yeah, and there's scriptures that indicate that as well. So anyhow, the fact that it could happen at any point means we better be ready all the time.
Yeah. Well, Mike, sadly we got about we got 3 minutes and 55 seconds left, and we've got another paragraph here talking about appellate courts, and so we're outside the trial court, headed toward an appellate court right now. So I think maybe what we might want to do is to save this until next. Well, as a matter of fact, let me point something out here. Next Monday, I will not be available.
Okay.
I will be traveling from Las Vegas back to Little Rock. With a bag full of money, and I hope that doesn't get out.
You're a bit optimistic, aren't you?
What's that?
You're a bit optimistic, aren't you?
Well, yeah. I figured the scheme out, brother. I had a revelation the other night. I had a revelation, and I'm just speaking it into existence right now. So when I come back, I'll probably have a private plane, maybe a plane that I own, bringing the money back.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, we're going out for the Bible conference this coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, flying back on Monday. So what I want to do is offer you an opportunity, if you would like, to do the program by yourself, the same way you would, same way you did it last time. Go ahead and do it from home if you'd like, and you don't have to say yes or no right now, but just let me know. Otherwise, it'll be BBN 24/7, 365.
Probably, I probably will do it. I just have to
work it out.
Get something prepared for that in particular.
Okay.
But I will confirm it to you.
Well, buddy, I'll tell you what. If you don't have something backlogged by now, after all these years in the ministry, you're in trouble.
Oh, I have. I was gonna. I can just talk about anything then. I don't have to go on with.
No, talk about why you can lose your salvation. Talk about tithing.
Okay.
You know, something important.
What I probably will do will make it an open line as well.
That's fine.
Hopefully, people who are a bit hesitant to call in can just call me and say, I'd like to talk about such and such, or can you answer this question, or
absolutely,
I'd like to make a comment about something.
Yeah.
That's what I think makes it really spontaneous and
we'll
move it along. So
no doubt about it.
That's probably what I'll do. And by the way, next time we get together, I would like to, you know, you have these questions about these bullet points, and rather than just push right on by those, maybe we could talk about those a bit.
Well, okay, yeah, fine. Hey, listen, that's great.
You say do well to understand the following.
Sure.
And, do the folks have these notes to look at?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I bet they would like to. What are there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bullet points, and they're all questions. And maybe we could just spend at least a little time,
sure enough,
trotting those out and answering them.
As a matter of fact, I plan. This doesn't have anything to do with that, but I plan to ask some of these questions while I'm out in Las Vegas.
Okay, good.
Sure
well,
enough, yeah.
That would be a good jump-off point for us to.
Oh, absolutely.
To go there. So I'll kind of put a marker here for us next time we get together.
Okay, so it'll be a week from this coming Monday. A week from this coming Monday.
Okay, and
is
I'll
that right?
I'll confirm soon enough to where you can get.
Oh, that's fine.
To the folks.
Okay, pal, that's fine, buddy. Okay, listen.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike, for being with me today, man. I tell you, I appreciate you beyond belief. I will tell you, I really do, buddy.
You're an inspiration to me as well, and I just I just have the highest respect and love for you.
Well, thank you, pal. Appreciate it. Same here. Okay.
Bye-bye
now.
Bye-bye.